Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Tales from the Road, Volume 8. You know, I lost touch with Rebecca about 20 years ago. And I use social media to track her down. Well, a few months ago, we started messaging each other, which led to actual phone conversations. She was all grown up, but at the same time, it was like we had just talked a few weeks ago. She had moved way back across America to a little suburb outside of Pittsburgh. She worked as a dental hygienist. We were actually in the planning stages of me visiting her. The thought had me very excited. From that day, so many years ago that I never said goodbye, my life has been a series of incidents where I just let people down. Even Rebecca mentioned how much I had disappointed her by not saying goodbye. I felt like a real asshole. But this was one wrong I was going to right. Less than a month before I was to set off to see her, fate stepped in like an asshole. It was a mild evening, early this past May. I was driving home along a meandering two-lane highway. Me and my dog, Coco, had just run some errands. He had picked up some chips and some dog food. Such is the life of the bachelor. I don't know, I felt like I had to rush. I had no place to be, really. Still, I felt compelled to pass 5 cars at once, not 5 minutes from my house. I got past 4 of them. That last one, he decided to slow down and make a left turn into his driveway. There was no time to react. I nailed the shit out of him. The memories of the immediate aftermath are sparse and confusing. I was on the edge of the road, upright, cornfields to my right, the mashed up pickup that I had hit to my left. Looked like the guy was okay, big truck, not surprising, I guess. I felt dazed. Everything got bright, and I passed out. I woke up still in my car. Where's Coco? I frantically swiveled my head around looking for him. No use. He's gone. In the distance, there's a confusion of paramedics and fire trucks. I see my father talking to a police officer. I see my grandfather right next to him. He was the patriarch of the family, the leader, since I was a child. I recall everyone always turning to him for guidance. Why was no one helping me, though? That thought rolled around my head as I again passed out. I awoke in a hospital room, a busy one I was discovering. I felt like I was at my own funeral or something. People came and went. They never really looked at me for very long. No one would speak to me. My mother was there. She was upset, to say the least. I tried to console her, but it was like I didn't have any breath with me with which to speak. That dazed, lightheaded feeling persisted. I just wanted to close my eyes and drift off. I noticed my grandfather again, quite clearly. He was in the hallway. He just stared at me, right before I lost consciousness. I remembered that he had died when I was 6. My hospital stay was short, maybe a few days. Whatever injuries I had, they were pretty mild because I felt very little pain. Seemingly recovered for the most part, I even got home on my own. All that lingered was a feeling of fatigue and a dull soreness. One thing that raised my spirits was being greeted by my dog upon opening the door to my apartment. He went crazy, jumping up and trying to kiss my face. It was the first happiness I'd felt since the accident. I always wanted to say that. It would be the only joy I would feel for quite a while. Days and weeks went by. I felt listless and generally devoid of any motivation to do anything. Something about that accident had taken the life out of me. I didn't want to interact with anybody. They would understand, I thought. For shit's sake, I almost died. All I wanted was to just be left alone for a while. Just a man and his dog. I didn't work. I barely ate. I just walked Coco, taking care to avoid other dogs. He had some major leash aggression and would lunge when confronted with a feral canine. I also slept a lot. Oh, the dreams. It was like a highlight reel of all the big events of my life. My first day of kindergarten, my first puppy, my first kiss, the accident, and Rebecca. Her more than anything. In fact, she was just about all I thought about in my waking life, too. I've been looking forward to righting that wrong. Seeing her again became the reason that I got out of the house. It was a motivation to get on with my life, instead of just sitting around like some kind of recluse. So one day, early last month, with Rebecca's address committed to memory, me and Coco set off on a road trip from upstate New York to western Pennsylvania to see her. We drove without stopping for the better part of a day. I hadn't contacted Rebecca. I wanted it to be a surprise. Coco and I would show up and we would start a wonderful new life. A life, as it turned out, that was going to be delayed for a little bit longer. Rebecca wasn't home. There was a park across the street from her. She had mentioned it in our conversation. The dentist office she worked for was just a couple of blocks away. I recalled that she mentioned how she would walk to and from work through this park in the summertime. Seemed like a good place for us to surprise her. Coco and I walked along the main path into the heart of the park where she was sure to spot us. I was nervous about the other dogs all around us, but Coco barely paid attention to them. They didn't seem to care much about him either, other than a few nervous barks aimed in our general direction. We found a bench a little ways from the main path and took a seat. I had brought along some treats in my pocket. I threw them to Coco to pass the time. I saw her. For the first time in almost 2 decades, I saw her. She was beautiful, freckly with strawberry blonde hair and mischievous eyes, still lanky but grown up. I watched her stroll up the path until she was only a couple dozen feet away. Rebecca? She froze for a second. Slowly she turned and looked me in the eye. She smiled her wonderfully infectious smile. It's you, she whispered unbelievingly. What are you doing here? I didn't think I would see you again. Slowly, she walked over and wrapped her lanky arms around me again, her nose pressed against my neck. I could feel her breath. It was just like that time, all those years ago in the pool. It didn't turn into a kiss this time, though, just a long embrace. I'm sorry, Rebecca. I'm so sorry. I know, it's okay. She laughed, squeezing me close. I should have said goodbye. I've thought about you so much. My life has sucked. I've never been able to stop thinking about you. And I just am so sad that I left you like that. I told her as I fought back tears. I dream I would meet you again and say I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. We held each other for a very long time, after which we sat on the bench. We didn't really talk, just kind of soaked up one another's presence. I was enjoying myself. The guilt I felt over the years from not saying goodbye, it was gone. It was a weight off my back. I was happy in a way I had not known since childhood. As we sat, she played around with Coco. Does he know any tricks, she asked. Yeah, he can lie down, roll over, sit pretty. That's about it. Can he shake? Yeah, he doesn't know that one. I must have given him 1/2 pound of these peanut butter treats, trying to teach him, but I got nothing. I haven't tried again in years. Oh, come on. Hand me some of those treats. It took about 20 minutes for her to teach Coco how to shake hands with his paw. He loved doing it. As soon as one of us had a treat in hand, he would sit down and offer up a paw. I was so engrossed at how well Coco had learned this trick that I was startled when Rebecca abruptly stood up. Now this is really goodbye, she told me, with just a hint of melancholy smile. What are you talking about? He's here to take you back, Jose. Who? Rebecca glanced behind me. I turned around. It was my grandfather, not 10 feet away. Again, he just stared at me. I thought I saw a bit of a smile, but I didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. He was dead after all. Wait, oh shit. I'm dead, aren't I, Rebecca? She said nothing at first. I searched her eyes for an answer. I didn't get one. He's taking you home, was all she said. Home? Go with him, Jose. It's what is best for you. I'll be waiting. With that, she kissed me softly on the lips, looked at me real hard for a second, then turned and walked away. As I watched her get smaller in the distance, it suddenly all made sense. I died. I died in that accident. That's why I was seemingly unharmed. That's why nobody talked to me for weeks. I couldn't even remember what I had eaten. How did I get to Pennsylvania? I crashed my car. Plus, the only living thing that acknowledged me was my dog. Fuck, I killed my dog too. I'm such an asshole. None of those dogs bothered him because none of this is real. My dead grandfather must be some spirit guide who is supposed to bring me away from limbo and on into the afterlife or something. Why was Rebecca there, though? She wasn't dead. Maybe grandfather used her memory to make me let go. I needed to say goodbye to her, and since I had, he was taking me to the next plane. I picked up Coco and walked over to grandfather. He said nothing, just smiled at me, turned around, and started to walk off. I followed, Coco clutched in my arms. There was a bright light just ahead. We walked towards it. It felt good. I didn't regret anything I had done. I was happy with how things turned out, and now I was going home. I closed my eyes. It was so warm. Jose, can you hear me? Jose, Jose. I opened my eyes. The first thing I noticed was the pain. It was like I had been dropped off the roof of a 10-story building. Just aches and pains everywhere. Then there was the smell. Sweat and gauze and sanitizer. Where the hell was I? Jose, can you open your eyes, sweetheart? Can you hear me? It was my mother. The lids of my eyes were heavy, but I got them open. I saw my mother's face just inches from my own. She smiled at me. You're alive, Jose. You're alive. We thought you weren't ever coming back to us. I think I wept for about 10 seconds before passing out. It took a couple of days for me to maintain an alert, wakeful state. After that, I was transferred out of the hospital into a mental health facility. It was there that my sessions with a shrink started. We talked about what had happened and why I had done what I had done. Turns out that I tried to kill myself. Shortly after reconnecting online with Rebecca, she was in a fatal car accident. I guess the thought of seeing her again and righting a wrong that had been eating at me for years was pretty much the only thing that kept me going. When I found out about her death, I went out and got hammered, then swallowed a shit ton of pills. Not even sleeping pills either. Tylenol and shit. Still, my liver pretty much shut down. The only reason I didn't die was because I had my music blaring so loud. It was the middle of the night that the police got called. My door was unlocked, so they came right in when I didn't initially answer their pounding. I told the shrink about the dream I had of the crash, my grandfather, and visiting Rebecca again. He told me I had been unconscious for a few days. My mind was trying to cope with all that had transpired. He told me that's what dreams often do. They force you to deal with some stress that you don't confront while awake. I stayed in there for a good part of the summer. Yeah, it was still May. Over this period, I came to accept the fact that all those dreams were simply manifestations that my subconscious created to make me gain the closure with Rebecca that I so desperately wanted. It was all about survival. Something inside me knew that if I hadn't gotten that closure, I was going to again try and end the misery by taking the easy way out. About a month ago, I got out. I got to go back to my apartment and my dog. My parents had paid rent and taken care of Coco for 3 months. My work didn't know how I tried to kill myself, just that I had an accident. I picked up right where I left off. Every day, things seemed a bit more normal, for better or worse. It's hard when I think of how I never truly got to say goodbye to Rebecca. I mean, really say goodbye, face to face. The doctor told me to stay positive and think of what I have to live for. That works some days, kind of. Other days, however, I get that creeping feeling that I missed my chance to be happy. I felt that way the days leading up to my suicide attempt. I haven't dared drink. It would take me back to the dark place where there is no hope. I don't like thinking of that place. On my bad days, I'm certain I will find my way back there. It almost feels like suicide is still the inevitable conclusion to my life. But then a funny thing happened a couple of days ago. I was sitting on my stoop as Coco played in the front yard. I brought some beef jerky to snack on, which I did stealthily, as Coco would beg relentlessly if he knew I had it. I didn't hide it well enough, though. Once he caught sight of it, he ran over to me. I braced for him to jump all over me, but he never did. Instead, he politely sat in front of me and extended his paw. Story number 2. I don't often visit my parents. I try to avoid going there because I really can't stand the incessant questions about my personal life. But they are family, and I try not to alienate them from my life completely. So once every few months, I'll indulge them by visiting. They live only an hour's drive away, and most often I go with my girlfriend because she loves spending time with my mother. Shocking for most people I know. Last weekend, however, my girlfriend had been busy with work, and I had already made a promise to my mother that I'd visit soon. I have a Doberman named Luna, and I didn't want to leave her alone at home, so I packed her into my car for the road trip. I figured she'd make a good companion for the hour of driving, and I could take her for a walk in the park once we arrived. I started the journey, and just halfway through, I saw a roadblock ahead. I picked up my phone and turned on the GPS, which rerouted me from the highway onto a road which would go in an arc around the roadblock and go right back on the path which I was supposed to take. It said my trip would be around 20 minutes longer that way. Since I had no other choice, I decided to follow the prompt and got off the highway and onto the old, badly maintained road. It was around 2 p.m., so it was still pretty visible, but the weather had started to deteriorate, so adding the bad road to the rain, I had to slow down significantly. The road led between rows of crops until they cleared away and I was faced with industrial buildings far in front, which were part of a town ahead. I checked my GPS and realized that I was still on the right path. However, there was no indication anywhere that I would be going through a town. I shrugged it off and continued driving nonetheless. It was at this point that Luna started barking furiously at something in front. I checked the windshield to see if there were any bugs on there, and I saw nothing. I squinted towards the town. There didn't seem to be anything suspicious there, so I simply petted her, trying to calm her down. She kept spinning in circles, though, clearly agitated by something. Attributing her behavior to the bad weather, I went on and entered the town. After only a few blocks, I saw another roadblock in the middle of the street. Checking the GPS, I realized that it wasn't aware of it, and it instead continued telling me to go forward. I turned left and tried one of the adjacent streets, but it was blocked, too. I continued driving, looking for a way through, but all the streets leading in that direction were blocked. I checked the GPS again, but no dice. I was in front of a dental office by this point, so I figured I'd go inside and ask someone there for directions. Luna started barking again, but I told her to calm down and left her inside the car. I went inside the dental office and saw two people inside, the receptionist and a janitor. "Hi, sorry to bother you. I'm kind of lost." I approached the reception. The lady outright ignored me, continuing to type something on her computer. I waited for a moment, thinking she was in the middle of something and would respond soon. After around 10 seconds of waiting, I repeated, "Hey, excuse me, I have a question." She continued typing on her computer, completely ignoring me. I turned to the janitor, who was kneeling in front of a chair nearby and fixing it. "Sir, do you know how I can get out? All the roads I checked are blocked." Like the lady, the janitor didn't even glance in my direction. "Sir, can you hear me?" I said a little louder. The janitor made no response. I thought to myself that people here are extremely rude and want to simply use their bathroom, deciding I would try asking elsewhere. As I finished my business in the bathroom, I went back to the reception and pulled out my car keys out of my pocket. A coin got dragged out of my pocket along with the keys and fell on the floor with a loud clink. Immediately, the reception lady and the janitor jerked their heads in my direction. They had stopped doing their business and were now staring at me with unblinking gazes. I froze, not sure how to react. And then they both stood up at the same time. Not breaking their gazes, they started taking steady steps toward me. The janitor going around the chair and the reception lady around the desk. They didn't even stumble or run into any objects, despite the room being cluttered with a plethora of items. It was as if they knew exactly where to step, despite having their gazes fixed on me. I freaked out and ran up the stairs, which was right next to me. I shut the door and ran through the hallway, opening the next closest one, bursting inside the dental room. As soon as I stepped in, the dentist, which had been working on a patient, and the patient himself with dental cotton in his mouth, shot their heads in my direction, staring like the two people below. The dentist straightened his back, and the patient stood up, and they both started striding towards me, never blinking and never breaking their gazes away. I screamed and ran back outside and saw the janitor and reception lady no longer taking slow and deliberate steps but actively running after me, their faces contorted in anger. I shoved the janitor and he stumbled backwards onto the reception lady. I used that chance to run down the stairs and back outside on the street. It was pouring by now and I saw more people in the distance running in my direction with the same intense stares. What scared me the most was the way their facial expressions were. Their mouths were firmly shut and their eyes seemed angry and hateful. But they all silently ran towards me, not a single one of them uttering a word. I heard Luna's muffled barking from the car and I ran in, fumbling for my keys. I put the keys in the ignition with trembling hands and turned them. The engine roared to life and I floored it, grazing one elderly man by the arm. I went right back the way I came and drove out of that cursed town, intermittently glancing from the road to the rearview mirror, keeping an eye on the herd of people running after me. And then I heard a loud bang and my rear windshield broke. Luna started barking even more viciously, and when I looked in the rearview mirror, I saw one police officer pointing a gun towards the car. More bang ensued, and I ducked back down, holding Luna down as I did so. There were a few more bangs that echoed in the distance, and then they stopped. I drove in a duck position like that for a minute or so before checking on Luna if she was hurt, but luckily she wasn't. I looked in the rearview mirror again. The town was pretty far away, but I saw the town folk, probably hundreds of them, just standing in the street and staring in my direction. I turned off my GPS and drove right back home. I apologized to my parents and told them I had some car problems, promising I would visit sometime in the future. On my way back, the people who saw my shot-up car gave me weird glances, and a police officer who pulled me over didn't seem to believe my story, but let me off with a warning after a thorough check. I haven't gotten out of town since then, and I think that from now on, if the GPS reroutes me through any unfamiliar roads, I will ignore it and turn right back around. Story number 3. Have you ever seen a photograph that just seemed off? You know, like old photographs with something blurry in the background or with a shadow on it. Or it's just super creepy and you don't know why. It just seems off. I'm asking because something weird happened tonight and I really need advice. Because I'm not even sure if it's just my imagination or if this kind of shit actually exists. My family and I moved into this house about a month ago. I wasn't mad about it or anything. It wasn't an old town with spooky houses or something far out in the country. It was this older house in the city. To my mom, who grew up in the city, it's an oasis. To my dad, who grew up near the beach, it's a nightmare. But that's besides the point. The point is that everything was fine and dandy until we took the picture. It's a family tradition for us. Anytime we go somewhere, we have to take a picture. Sounds normal, except we always have to take a group shot before we leave. It is possibly the most difficult slash annoying event that occurs anytime we road trip. Or in this case, move houses. It's never exciting going through old albums and seeing pictures of us standing outside of the car, standing outside of the motel, or standing outside the airport. But that's just my opinion, and I'm rambling again. Anyway, this time was different. We lined up in front of the house while my father adjusted the camera. Then pressing the small button on the camera, he quickly ran to join us. "Smile big, everybody," he would always tell us, as the red button would rapidly flash, and then we were all blinded in white light. My father ran over to the camera to take another, then another. Then he would take us one at a time individually. When it was my turn, he lifted up his head to say, "Remember to smile big and wide, Emma." He always says it every time. It's the most annoying thing in the world, and so of course I frowned. I hate getting my photograph taken. When the camera flashed, I remember feeling something really weird on my back. Cold, clammy. Then my neck tickled as though something were brushing beside it. It was more than a mosquito, which made me jerk slightly forward. Mom asked me if everything was okay. I shrugged it off, figuring it was just a chill, and we were all headed into the house. It was weird, though. It was way too cold and way too spread out, like a whole body sensation. But I didn't think much of it. I often get the chills, even though it was super hot that day. A week and a half went by as we moved all our stuff around, tidying up the house. It was a pretty big house for its price, and I absolutely adored our bedrooms. My brother Mikey and I had this little door that connected our bedrooms that we would pass things through. He's only 15 and I'm 19, and we get along pretty well. He's way more mature than any teenager his age, into intense things like religion and philosophy. He's also a little shit, but I love him. Anyways, he was the first one to notice that something was wrong. My father was really frustrated tonight at dinner. We said prayers and passed around food when he says, "I think the camera's broken." We all stopped eating to give our condolences. My father isn't the best photographer in the world, but in his own head, he's a male version of Annie Leibovitz. He spends tons of money buying expensive equipment that takes hours to set up and days to finish. He even has his own dark room in the basement. "How so?" my mother asks. "Can you fix it?" My father says, "It's nothing wrong with the camera itself. It's just the quality or the timing or something." Emma's face broke the camera, Mikey says, and I'm going to smack it when my father goes, "Actually, that's the strange part about it. It's really only Emma's photos." I was sure this was all some stupid joke, so I insist that my dad bring up the photo. Eager to show us, as always, he goes down to the basement to get them, and in a few seconds comes back with about 8. He hands them to Mikey and continues to brainstorm the problem with us. At first, I was sure it was something involving darkroom. I was tired that night. I'd work on them, so I might have exposed the last few to light or something. Everything seemed normal except for a couple of white spots in the photos. Probably exposure. It didn't matter to me, really. I hate photographs. It just seemed unnecessary, and I always look like crap. But then, I don't know. There's no way that the development could mess these up like this. It has to be the camera. God damn it. I spent a fortune on it. I notice Mikey hasn't passed any of the photos around. "Found an ugly one of yourself? Oh, I forgot. You're always ugly." He doesn't say anything, but that's when I notice his face. His mouth hung open, his fingers tied around the photograph. Then he slowly turns and stares at me. He looks so freaked out that it completely knocked me off guard. "Emma, you..." I figured he was just being stupid, so I tried to grab it from him, but he yanks it away and runs up the stairs with all the photos. My dad tried to get him to come back down, saying that he needed the photos to show the camera store guy, but we all hear the door lock, which means he's never coming back down. My brother often gets overdramatic about things, whether it's something that he's passionate about or when he's up to no good. He always locks himself away and refuses to leave his room. It's kind of weird, but it never bothered me until tonight. He seemed scared. I'm not going to lie, I felt weird and totally creeped out. Yeah, he could be playing a prank on me, but he's never that concerned. I excuse myself, clean up and go upstairs to figure out what's going on. I knock, no answer. Annoyed at this point, I go to my room to try to sneak in through that little door. The handle's stuck, so I assume he has moved his desk in front of it. Little shit. I ask him what's up, and I even tell him he's freaking me out, but he still doesn't answer. After a little bit, I'm over it, so I get ready for bed and I'm about to fall asleep when I see something white slide underneath the door. I go over to pick it up, when another slides out, I turn the first one over. Look at your eyes. I turn the second paper over. It's a picture of me standing in front of the house. Nothing seems off, so I know at this point he's playing games. Then he slides another note. Look at it with the lights off. At this point, I was so done with him. But a part of me was curious, so I turn off the lights. At first, everything is exactly the same. I'm standing there, slouching, frowning, just being me. Then I look closer and things get really freaky. My face is the same, but something's wrong. Something's seriously wrong with my eyes. The lids droop slightly, and I'm not even looking at the camera. My hands are awkward and pale, but the worst part are my pupils. They aren't really focused. They aren't alive. I quickly turn on the lights. I hate scary shit like this, but I also know better and figure that I'm just tricking myself into thinking I see something that's not actually there. I calm down a bit and decide there is no reason to get so worked up. After all, Mikey thrives on this shit, and I don't want him winning. I tell him that this is seriously the stupidest prank ever, and that he's an asshole. He's silent for a moment, then I hear scribbling, followed by another note, and another, and another. Now I have all 8 of Dad's photographs and a note from him. Don't you see him? Him? What the fuck? He knows I hate ghosts and shit, and I really don't want to freak myself out again, but I'm too freaked out at this point not to make sure. I check that my door is locked so that Mikey doesn't burst in to scare me, then flick the lights off and look at the family photo. Like the first photo, it's completely normal. Nothing wrong with it, but I saw it. Right in the space between my brother and I was a pair of white eyes and a big gaping mouth. I remember the chill. That clammy feeling the day we took the photos. Something shifts on the floor, and I panic, fumbling with the light until it turns on. I scan my room just to make sure, then hit myself because I literally just checked for monsters in my closet. Still, I swear to God, I saw something. I don't dare look at the photos again, so I push them back under the door. I hear my brother scribbling. The last note he wrote tonight really scares me. My brother never jokes around with stuff like this, even when he plays pranks. He's in every one. I'm scared. I don't know what to do at this point. I'm completely scared shitless myself. But it can't be anything but a trick of the light. Or something. But it is super chilly right now. I don't know if I'll be able to sleep tonight, but this is just me overthinking. Right?